Hey everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, the last Weekly Manga Recap of 2014, almost certainly, unless we decide to change our minds within the next 8 hours or so, because it's December 31st, 2014. Chris, how's it going?
Well, Nick, I feel like what we should do is make this the last podcast of 2014, but we make it a 24-hour podcast, so it's also the first podcast of 2015 as well.
No.
We'll talk about manga for 24 hours straight. No. we'll go through all of the last, like, 6 months worth of Bleach, just so I have something to talk about.
That won't last 24 hours.
I don't know. You catch Nick in one of his rants, and you'll go on for a while.
I won't be talking about the last 6 months worth of Bleach. I'll just be talking about how Bleach is shit in general.
That'll eat up time, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm going, by the end of it, I'm just going, and the whole DSI thing is very disappointing and hot.
Crying.
Chris, why don't you talk? You've just been quiet for 4 hours. No, keep going, buddy.
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, Nick, my throat's a little hoarse right now.
Fucking hate you.
So, last week, we didn't actually really have a traditional episode. Those who watched the stream, though, got to catch us playing some Yu-Gi-Oh! And you using Gav's broken-ass deck.
I don't think it was broken, per se.
It wasn't broken, but it was something that was phenomenally easy for you to pick up on for how powerful it was, I guess, which was the surprising part of it. You actually kicked my ass a fair number of times.
So. I won the first two, I think, which I really should have retired.
Yeah, by the end of it, it was like, okay, the momentum's swinging back in my direction. I'm starting to get the hang of this, and you were like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Where are these black-bordered card things?
Yeah, what the fuck's an XYZ? How do I make them?
I told you how to summon them, and you
I just keep forgetting what they are.
And, like, after the fact, like, Gav was messaging me while he was watching the Twitch highlight. And he says, like, oh, I never used it. I was like, fuck you for putting Fire and Ice Hands in that deck. But it was fun. We got to answer some random Yu-Gi-Oh! Questions, which I always love to do. I fucking love Yu-Gi-Oh!
It just
doesn't come up very often because we don't read any of the manga, so.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the manga that's running currently in Jump is one that, like, started, like, 70% of the way through. So it's kind of tough to pick up into that and start doing that, so.
Maybe when Shonen Jump Online inevitably picks up the Arc 5 manga, I'll force you to read it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But anyway, speaking of actually reading manga, technically there was no Shonen Jump issue this week, but there was one last week, which we thought there wouldn't be. And we had already planned the episode around there not being one, so then we did that, and so now we're doing stuff a week late. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just do that now.
So we're basically catching up on last week, and actually technically almost 2 weeks ago of manga as well, because yeah. Crunchyroll had chapters 2 weeks ago.
Ugh.
But it's all very confusing.
It's okay, we'll be caught up after this week.
Yeah, we'll be caught up.
So let's start off as we normally do with Bleach. Chapter 610, Mausoleum of Skulls, which is probably, like, the first actually good English-titled chapter Bleach has had in a long time. So, last time it looked as if Jihabak was going to be defeated. No, he wasn't. Of course he fucking wasn't. And now he's going to do something to kick Hachibei's ass, or Ichibei's ass, sorry. And this chapter opens up. With Jugo explaining, oh, his majesty has been fighting with his eyes closed, with quotes around eyes closed, or rather just eyes. So he essentially says, basically, that there's that whole legend about the Quincy King. If his majesty were to have opened his eyes before the 9 years for his strength to be regained were up, then his majesty's power could have gone out of control and robbed the powers of all us Stern Ritters. So he kept his eyes closed for our sake, and now they are open. But he's had his eyes open this whole time, hasn't he?
Not figuratively, Nick. They've been literally open, but figuratively, he's been apparently nerfed hard, and now he's finally gained his quality of life buffs back.
I mean, it's just such a weird thing to me. It's like his eyes were closed, and now they are open. But his eyes have been open. No. Figuratively. Why don't you just use a different metaphor? Shut up.
Because it's the one we started with, and we're kind of bound to that.
So essentially, he's just been, I guess, stalling this whole time, but now he's totally at 100% power. Yeah. So Ichibei is completely flabbergasted as to how he's just shaken off his power to just give him a new name and so on and so forth. And Jubox says, "Now that my eyes are open, yes, that's right. I heard Juko's metaphor, and I'm sticking to it, too. And look, I got two pupils in my eyes. Ain't that freaky?
Look how weird I am.
Whoa. And from this moment on, I can see everything that will unfold into the distant future. I know everything I see, and thus all the powers I know take my side. That's my power, the Almighty." So this is bullshit.
Essentially, if it was a power, he can control it.
But now he's got magic eye powers. He's an Uchiha. So there you go. The legacy of Naruto lives on. I guess that, I don't know. It's weird. I guess that he's just been waiting for his dominion over everything to just be available, and now it is. And he's also got freaky eyes occasionally. I don't know. But Ichibei is like, "Oh yeah, like I'm going to lose. You say you're all powerful now that you've gotten rid of the name of Black Ant. Well, but do you intend to defeat me with all that black on you? Because remember, I can still control that stuff. I'm still holding on to that thing. Yes, that one part of my power that makes no sense. Still using it. Blah.
Suck it.
Hey,
you're still a Black Ant or something,
or whatever." And then he just drags all of this blackness off of Juhabak and puts it into a dish that he pulls out of somewhere? I don't know. And then the blackness kind of drips into the bowl like ink, and then he drinks the blackness, and he says, "Flowers bloom on even on the path of death. Where's the snack? Dye it black. Tear it apart. Roast it black. With the flame, oh so black, and I will scarf it down.
I feel like there needs to be a song to this.
With the pure bones left behind, I shall erect your tomb and mourn for your repose. You will never be bones more, so you will never become or sacrifice again."
I was thinking more of like a jingle, like the fucking, Maxwell House commercials, like, "Where's the snack? Dye it black, tear it apart, and roast it black." Like, just like a family dancing in the background as this is happening. That's what I was thinking. Like a Saturday morning cartoon jingle.
So he says this whole summoning ritual thing to create this mausoleum behind him. Like a literal mausoleum just appears out of the blackness. And he says, "These are graves dedicated to you. Built from knights stolen from the Soul Society 100 years from now." What? So he's taking power from the future?
I think just the black, Nick.
What? Why do people say weird things like this? They each, like, tell each other to fall to a pitch black hell. And basically, Ichibei is saying this to cap off his whole speech, but Juhabox is at the same time, and Ichibei's like, "Hey, how'd you know I was going to say that?" Juhabox's like, "I thought I told you I see it all. Also, I was looking at your script. This is a very long diatribe, and so you have notes written on the back of your palm."
Yeah. He's like, "I told you I see and I control all the powers, and I read JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, where Joseph Joestar does this very similar trick. And, well, I can do it now and then, too. I also could say, oh my god, in English really loud.
Check out my eyes. Whoa.
Now I have 12 of them. Whee!
You seem to think that I'm still one without a name, but my name is Juhabak. Now I've got three pupils in each of my eyes, and I'm the one who will rob you of everything." And then Ichibei just explodes. it just, like, erupts, and his legs go one leg, and his arms go another, and his head is going another, and that's the end of the chapter.
Well, this was deeply satisfying, right, Nick?
Oh, God.
All of your questions have been answered.
It's just, I don't care about any of this. I haven't cared about any of this for a long time. We've just been seeing Juhabok/Juhabok elite guards taking on the Squad Zero. And what do we know about any of them at all? They've just trained Ichigo and Rukia and Renji. They've just been introduced in this arc. Juhabok's and his men have just been introduced in this arc. Most of his men have been introduced in the last, you know, several months. And I'm supposed to care about them fighting each other. And that's it. There's nothing to really seize onto. Even if the powers made sense or were kind of cool, I don't care about any of the characters involved.
Yeah, Bleach right now is just in this sort of weird spot where it needs to kind of fill out the rest of these characters it introduced and kind of give them their purpose in this arc. But at the same time, we're also reaching that point where it's like, I know these guys aren't that important, though. And you're really, like, I know they're important in the context of the story, but I know they aren't going to really do anything because they're not the main characters. Like, they're not the ones who are going to be the ones who beat your big bads. So it's kind of just delaying things. Like, if you look at where we were at the start of this year, we'll kind of cover that next week. Bleach has not done a lot in 2014 at all. You know, we've really just kind of gone from one fight to the next with not a whole lot of progress in between. So this chapter is at least somewhat important in that we get the notion that Juhabok, you know, is his final released form right now, or at least fully powered.
Until he puts himself in a cocoon and then grows into a beautiful butterfly and then into a hollow.
I'll be so pissed if there's another fucking butterfly.
I think that what's weird about the way that this arc has unfolded is that so many of the characters that we kind of knew about before were just so casually killed off. Like, Izuru is technically dead, supposedly, right now. And he was just killed by just, like, something. Just instantaneously. And Rose and what's his name? Squad 9 captain.
Kensei?
Kensei Mugura. They were killed in their sleep by a Gremmy. And they could be having these big fights with these people, and you would at least have been familiar with them beforehand and have had at least some lingering attachment to them, so that it would have been kind of important when they had these long fights and then were defeated. Instead of, oh, this guy is really strong. He's totally really strong. I'm going to tell you about how strong he is. And then the very first time he gets to demonstrate how strong he is, he's got to get his ass kicked. It's not logical. It doesn't make any sense. It's
incredibly unsatisfying, too.
Yeah. And that's been just the way that this entire arc has been going down. It's just, Kubo has always had that annoying habit of using a new character where an old character would do.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of fucking new characters.
There are always a lot of fucking new characters. So yeah, I think that Fairy Tail is next.
Yes, Fairy Tale, chapter 413, The Tome of End. And the cover page is Lucy as a sexy police officer, and Natsu and Happy as non-sexy burglars, unless cats with hat bandanas is your sexual fetish, which, hey, it very well be. I'm not going to judge you for it.
Also, Lucy's apparent patrol partner is a fox with a gigantic fucking mouth.
Well, they're also called Magical Police Department Operation Miniskirt.
Yeah.
And I want to hope that you can't see it because the bag's covering him. I want to hope the fox is also wearing a miniskirt as well. Like, they're right. A miniskirt team. But he just happens to be, like, a 7-foot-tall wolf.
Despite the fetishy aspect of this with Lucy, because, you know, she's like, I'm a sexy police officer wearing a miniskirt and I'm twirling handcuffs around my finger. You actually look, like, more dignified and less sexualized than normal, Lucy. So good on you. Be a strong woman in law enforcement.
Anyway, so the last time we visited Fairy Tail, all of the dragons had shown up to blast through all of the face bombs, and that's where we basically pick up as now the signal that it, or the...
Deus Ex Dracona.
Yes, the symbol that had read face 00, you're all fucked, now read face signal lost. And then Lecter says, oh, the face indicators have blinked out. And Froge, shockingly, says, why? Which, as we know, isn't Froge agrees.
Froge, that's like the most, like, independent thought Froge has ever had.
It would be great if he was just like, oh, the face indicators blinked out. Why? Did something stupid happen? I don't get what happened.
Like, Froge is suddenly the only person who's like, but why? Why?
This is dumb. Why are all the dragons?
Is no one else concerned about this?
No, all of the members of Fairy Tail are also super happy because they're just like, the dragons came and they saved us! And even Ignil's like, we have halted the resurrection of End! We win!
And as soon as Froge hears this explanation, he goes back to Froge thinks so too.
Froge is like, we agree that Froge thinks we're victorious! I'm sorry, I picked up Mard Gear's habits too! I, Froge, agree I picked up Mard Gear's habits!
Froge speaks in the third person too.
And Mard Gear sits there and he's like, failure! And Gray notices the Book of End. But then we cut away to Sting, I think is the light one. I mix up Sting and Rogue a lot.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so Wise Logia was alive? And Igno's like, yes, and so are the other dragons whose names are too weird for me to try to pronounce.
Skiadrum, Vitalicana, and Grandini.
Yes, as I'm going to call them, Metallica, Ariana Grande, and Sky...
Skypia.
Thing. Sky, yeah, Sky Thing. But Igno explains.
Like those other two, though.
Well, they're musicals. Like, what fits with Sky? Fuck it. Sky Duty.
I'll try and look for a Sky themed musical group while you're doing this. Go ahead.
Excellent. Igno explains, he's like, we were all inside our dragon slayers. To be more exact, we used a secret technique that allows us to lie dormant within your bodies. And Natsu's like, hey, yeah, you owe me an explanation. I think I would have remembered if I ate you. Which is actually a pretty funny line for Natsu to say there. But Igno explains there were two reasons for this. The first was to prevent our dragon slayers from completely turning into dragons, as Acnologia did. And as for the other, but before he can explain, Acnologia wakes up, attacks Igno. Igno grabs him and is like, I'm flying into the sky to finish this! Go get that book! So, of course, Gray and Natsu had to have another stare down over the book. But then we cut back to the sky where Acnologia is fighting Igno. And Acnologia, I think this is the first time he's talked, or if not, it's one of the very few rare times he's actually spoken.
There was a bit during the fight with Igno where he was kind of trash-talking a bit.
Okay. He hasn't really spoken much.
This is like his first
really
big, like,
monologue. Yeah. And he's like, you want to prevent dragon slayers from becoming dragons? That's why they were in their bodies? And, you know, Wignell's like, what are you after, Acnologia? If you fear it, and you don't have to worry, he's no longer a threat. Forget the humans. And Acnologia's just like, feared? You think I would fear a mere demon? What rubbish! And the king of dragons, Apocalypse Dragon! And Wignell's like, but your name was Steve when you were a human. You're trying to make yourself really epic. And he's like, no, you were born a human, and I will not let Natsu and the other Dragon Slayers turn out like you. And Acnologia just responds, there is only one thing I desire. Destruction. The destruction of all. But before we can see how their fight's going to end, we cut back to Natsu and Gray, who are about to kind of have their little showdown. But all of a sudden, the book disappears from Gray's hand. And instead, it appears in Xerath's hand, as he says, this book belongs to me. So I'll have it back. It means a lot to me. And he has
Is he very British now?
I was trying to channel Harry Potter, which just made me channel a Cockney English accent because I don't know how to do any other English accents. But yes, he's Harry Potter. But no, Xerath has shown up at the end here, which is actually somewhat of an interesting development. Because this has been one of the few characters Fairy Tail has been slowly building up for now to be like.
I applaud the actual like continued build of Zeraviza as a big bad.
And he's been a very mysterious character. Sometimes he seems almost neutral and almost like a, you know, ashamed of the fact that he just creates death wherever he goes. But other time he is just this very strange enigmatic character. So.
It's a nice change of pace for Fairy Tail, which is always usually just like, here's the villain, we beat them in 30 chapters. Here's another villain, we beat them in 60 chapters. Here's another one.
Yeah. Rather rinse, repeat. Half the time they become heroes, you know. But this time, as I said, it remains to be seen. You know, we haven't seen what Xerath's going to do, but this is a more interesting development than, you know, Fairy Tail could have ended the year on.
Okay, the best result I could come up with that's music-related was Skylar Grey. But I don't know if you've actually...
Skylar Grey.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever listened to anything about her.
No, I have no idea
who she is. We could do a Nickelodeon reference if you're cool with that.
I mean, go for it.
Chip Skylark.
Who?
Yeah, did you ever watch Fairly Odd Parents?
I guess not enough.
Nah, he was like an NSYNC parody, basically.
Oh, okay. I vaguely remember. I thought you were about to be like, no, he's like a late season character, like season 11 or 12 they brought him in. You know.
It was fairly early on.
Okay, I actually am vaguely recalling this guy. Wasn't this, like, whole gimmick having perfect teeth?
Yeah. There was a song that they did called, like, My Shiny Teeth in Me or some shit.
My Shiny Teeth in Me. I vaguely recall that song. Okay,
now you vividly remember it.
I'm like, now it's all coming together now. And didn't fucking one of the NSYNC members actually voice him?
Probably.
Alright. It's all coming together now. Obviously not Justin Timberlake. He's got better things to do. I'd have to hope.
Say, Chris Kirkpatrick.
There was a Chris in NSYNC.
Yep, yeah, he was in NSYNC. Okay.
There you go. Boosh.
Anyway.
Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma.
Chapter 100, A Sharp Point. So, last chapter, Kurokiba showed off his awesome, super explosive fragrance dish. And this chapter opens up with that. It's like, oh, that's my Ryo for you. He's so great. And she's still carrying on that whole Valley Girl type of speech that I really don't think fits her. She's just throwing in random. She says, having that explosion of fragrance was, like, a perfect surprise.
What a totally awesome carpaccio!
Stop that.
Like, oh my god!
So, Akira comes up. And he has a carpaccio, which is not a cartuccio. I think I said that it was the same thing the last time, but it's just because they're so similar, and I know nothing about food, so there you go.
Me and Nick are just like, is it a cheeseburger? It doesn't look
like a cheeseburger. It's got way too many vegetables.
Yeah, it's got a lot. It's like they took all the shit that goes on the burger and spread it out over a plate.
And then took the burger itself and chopped it up, and then took the bun and turned it into some sort of weird pasta. I don't know.
That doesn't seem like it'd be very good.
Nah. You can't even pick that up in your hands. They just fall apart.
I bet he's going to lose. He didn't make a good burger.
So, Kurokiba is like, oh, well, he's got an awesome eye for ingredients, but there's no way he can beat me with a measly appetizer. And Arina is also confused by this, but Alice starts to chuckle, and then she just goes, first it was cartuccio, and then it's carpaccio. They're, like, almost identical. Dying. Oh god, now she's talking like she's on the internet all the time. She's just going to start using random Tumblr speak.
I did actually...
If another chapter ends up having Alice say, I can't even, I may not be able to even.
I did actually find it funny. She's just like, dying!
Just starts speaking in hashtags.
No, that's my thing. She can't take that from me.
Hashtag copyright.
Hashtag hero.
Wait, what? What? So, Kurokiba is like, oh, you can't. My cartuccio rocked the judges with an explosion of powerful scent and umami flavor. Okay, dude, you need to stop that. Don't you start talking like that, too. Except he's talking like he's from the 90s or something.
Like, you know, whatever. Totally tubular, guys.
Gnarly.
Did you like my fish?
Totally radical. So
that guy's fish looks gross.
Akira takes out a blowtorch and starts searing the fish. and all the digits go, oh, he's searing the exterior edges to give it a pleasing appearance. But as he does it, suddenly the scent washes over the judges, and Leonoria is like, ah, because, you know, softcore porn is cooking, basically. So he announces now that his dish is finished after searing it. He calls it seared pike carpaccio, and everyone goes, ooh. There's just a speech bubble that just goes, ooh.
Look, I was like, guys, were you really that blown away by it?
Yes!
I never would have thought that you could do that to a fish. Sear it? Oh.
So Leonoria immediately dives in. Her clothing seems to be burned up along with her awkward speech pattern. And she talks about how great it is. Then the grandfather, whose name escaped me, Sindlamon, that was it. He is shocked to learn that this is merely allspice as opposed to a grand assortment of spices, which Hayama typically specializes in. And Arina says, oh, but his skill is actually manipulating fragrance itself. It doesn't have to do necessarily with just adding a whole bunch of different spices and stuff. This time, he subtracted spices instead, and thus accentuate the freshness and flavor of the in-season pike. So, a twist on the old ability, basically. Mm-hmm. And Ima says, I use this particular keishi sauce to really help bring it out. All the students are getting continuously shocked by all the different revelations while all these different people are breaking it down. And Hayama eventually sums it all up by saying, the fatty acids of the fish mixed with the sugars in the keishi. In other words, I use subtraction. Okay, I can't apparently say the word spice and subtraction next to each other.
Spice traction!
I keep on going Since Emon analyzes this as basically being Kurokiba, his cooking is like an enormous greatsword, and he's just got fucking Cloud's Buster Sword. It's a Buster Sword.
Yeah.
With his explosive power, he can drag out the appetites, the animal need for food, even from the experienced judges of the finals. On the other hand, Akira Hayama's duck dish during the semifinals was a sharp, glittering swirl of spices that cut like a bejeweled scimitar. But tonight's Akira is different. His cooking was precise, deliberate, utterly refined. It was like the slim, fine point of a rapier, honed for one purpose. And there's this big image of Kurokiba charging Hayama with his Buster Sword, and Hayama just getting him in the throat with his fencing sword. So, he basically, I guess, prepared exclusively to have this showdown with Kurokiba just to show him up. So, this is eventually broken down to, the judge's impression is like they are in an archery club and they're shooting pike at a bullseye.
I do like it. It's like, oh, it was so perfect. Of pure strength, of pure flavor, being...
aren't aerodynamic. Shut up.
Released in one unerring shot. And it's just, yeah, them fucking archery with pikes. And everyone's just like, oh. I gotta love how ridiculous they make some of these descriptions come out to be.
Yeah.
That fish was so good, it was like shooting fish arrows into a target.
Only Soma Yukihira is left. The moon is almost across the skyway. And then as the moon finally vanishes over across the ceiling, Soma steps forward and says, order up! This is the closer. And that's where the chapter ends. Next chapter, presumably, we'll get to see Soma's challenge. So,
yeah. Do you think he's going to win, Nick?
I don't know. Presumably, Hayama is the leader at this point, though. So.
Mm-hmm. I still have a lot of the series to catch up on, but I do like what they did in this chapter of kind of expanding a bit upon what, what's his name?
Hayama.
Ryuma? Yeah.
Kurokiba.
The white-haired kid.
Hayama.
What Hayama's actual specialty is, you know, is noted frequently. It's like, oh, you just know how to really, you know, manipulate spices and, you know, make things smell really well and things like that. He's like, yeah. But part of it also knows when not to add spices. So this time I just added one thing because I, you know, had such expertise. I realized that's all it needed. And that's, you know, that's where my ability really came in handy, is I came in with this fine point of an ability this time. Whereas you're just a big, stupid, smashy-smash person. So I thought that was kind of a cool way to kind of add a bit more depth to that ability and kind of really narrow in on what his actual particular speciality is.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting as a chapter 100, though. I guess most series don't do something crazy special, but...
It's not a particularly, like, encompassing celebration of the series or anything, but I guess that it's, you know, a big moment in general. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, Gakuhōte.
All right, Nick.
What an odd opening. It's chapter 4, The Pretty Idol Irie Takanashi Photovoyeurism Case, Part 2. So, this opens with Sailor Pine. I had to look up what the fuck they were doing. It's a reference to a kids show that ran on the NHK in Japan in, like, the late 60s through the early 90s. And she's doing a parody of the Can I Do It song. And so, while they're doing this, I'm just like, what the fuck are they doing?
I didn't even realize they were doing something specific.
Well, because eventually, Abaku says what they're doing. He says, you know, the song Can I Do It is not from Waka Waka's show, but from his predecessor Nappo's show. So I looked up Nappo Can I Do It, and I got this result on Wikipedia. It's a show called Dekiru Kana, an educational children's TV show with protagonists Nappo-san and the anthropomorphic gopher Gonta-kun. Yeah.
Well, okay then.
Yeah. So that's why...
You did a lot more research into this than I ever would have. I'd have been like, huh, they're wearing wacky costumes at the start of this.
Yeah, that's why her lowly assistant has, like, the ears on his head and is calling himself Gololi.
Ah.
Gonta Gololi, see. Yeah. So, basically, this is all just, like, a framework for the way that Pine is giving her explanation, which is that, oh, this is how the peeping camera was set up. See, the peeper's camera was put in the shoe cubby. And so Gololi, or I forget what his actual name is, Lolimatsu, that was it. Damn. I can't believe I remember this guy. So he's like, oh, but if the camera's visible, the peeping will be discovered right away. And goodbye, freedom. And Pine's like, yeah, but you just need the following materials. If you use an acrylic board and a mini camera and spray paint and session cups, you can just attach it like this and make it so that it's barely visible. And then you just slide it in like this, and then it will be barely visible beneath a false bottom. And then, yeah, that's how you set up a peeping camera. Kids, don't do this.
Well, it's actually pretty funny, because if you recall in Bakuman, that was part of the problem they had with Perfect Crime Party when they were writing it. They were like, kids are trying to imitate this. So it's almost like Obata went and he's like, I actually do want to do a series like that, where they do shit like that, but I should make sure to remind you, kids, don't do this.
You'll get caught by the school judgment system.
Then you'll have to go to court with a fucking, you know, Sailor Moon ripoff, and a kid with ladybug hair, and a baby with a really old face. It's awful.
So, Prime finishes up for her explanation about how this happened, and she concludes, yeah, you know, dear friends who are watching at home, please don't copy us, okay? Bye! And then immediately changes back into her sailor outfit as Lolimatsu, like, runs off with all the props. And she's like, and sir, anyone could have done that with the materials from a hardware store! And all the kids in the audience are just like, what the fuck are these people doing?
I'm so confused.
And then Abaku goes, hey, that's not from Waku Waku's show, it's just from his predecessor Nappo's show. And Uozumi, who he's defending, is like, what? Why are you focusing on that?
For the love of God.
Please help me. I'm accused of being a pervert. So, Abaku says, you know, you said all that, but, like you just said, it could have been anyone. There's no reason to believe it could have just been the accused person. And Pine says, that's true. I was just demonstrating that, you know, it could have easily been done. So, just establishing that he could have done this. And then, as the first witness, she brings up Kuriko, the friend of the of Irie, who is, you know, the victim of the case. And so, Kuriko just goes on and on, is like, about how awful Uozumi is and how he had been acting suspicious around the shoe cubby, about how he had been flipping girls' skirts up. He was already, you know, this terrible person who would be mean to girls, bring lewd books to school, and yet, when it comes to a girl he likes, he'll really wax on romantically. It's angel this and destiny that. It's totally creepy. So, Abaku seizes on to some detail in her statement and sneers. It's actually like a grin, but it says sneer next to his lip. It's the happiest sneer I've ever seen. So he says, like, all right, the trap is set for my counterattack. And so he says, all right, there is one other common thing that boys and girls do in front of the opposite gender shoe cubby that they don't want to be seen by others. And it was like, you, no way. You mean, yes, Uozumi, you prepared it, right? And Uozumi's like, okay, I can do this. That crybaby Tento found the courage to plow through, and if I get cold feet here, I'll lose my pride and won't be able to keep being friends with him. And he pulls out an envelope, which is sealed with a heart sticker. And he starts reading it, and it's an insanely gushy love letter to Iron.
It's absurdly lame. Like, Lady... Fucking Ari, you are my angel, my goddess, my yummy fucking nutty...
Imato Nadishiko, which means ideal wife, basically.
My destiny. And the entire time it's happening, like, the world around him is turning into a fucking like meadow with birds.
Behind him and flower fields appear everywhere.
He gets really fucking Bishonen.
A certain book I read the other day made me understand. You're a bird. A bluebird that brings happiness, flying freely on pure wings. I didn't notice because you were right there, but your hair is so red and your heart so blue. And the baby judge starts like, I don't know if he's crying or if he's just like, what the fuck, and is adjusting his eyelids. And then it just says, the extremely painful text keeps going, but we shall omit it and spare you.
5 minutes later.
Do you have any idea how long it take? How long a poem would have to be for it to last 5 minutes reading aloud? So Abaku says, see, that's why he was actually in front of her shoe cubby. It was so he could deliver a love letter for her there. And Fine says, that's ridiculous. Witness testimony indicated that the ghost hated her and bullies her. And Abaku's just like, oh, come on. Boys are mean to girls they like. That's common knowledge. That's cliched knowledge, more like. I knew plenty of girls that I hated. Iri, however, says, but that can't be true, because I never got such a letter. And Abaku says, ah, yes, I picked up on that after listening to you two talk yesterday, when there was that weird tension between you. And Ito goes, oh, the strained conversation was because Uozumi hadn't gotten any reply to his letter. So that's why he was acting cold to her, because she hadn't acknowledged it anyway. And Iru was just confused because she thought that he was being insane. He doesn't say that part, but you know. In short, in the shadow of the idle photovoyeurism case, there lurked a love letter disappearance case, too. Everyone's just like, what? And Pine says, well, no! No! This means I'm going to lose the case, and a new case being tacked on, too! Oh! She doesn't even care about the fate of anyone. She's just like, I'm just gonna lose.
She's like my record.
So Abaku's like, don't give up yet, Miss Green Pineapple.
What an asshole.
He's like, well, technically speaking, your explanation of the way that the Perkin was in is correct. And in fact, that's how the letter was lost. Because if, you know, Miss Takahashi's cub door has a lock on it, there's only one way to get the love letter inside. And that's by slipping it through the slit in the bottom, which means that it fell through the false bottom. And that's how it was hidden. Then, when the perp got the camera back, they found the love letter and took it with them. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun! It's time for a dramatic turnabout, Nick!
By the way, hasn't there been someone who said some odd things? Huh? As you all experienced just earlier, Uozumi here has a somewhat peculiar flair. Did any of you know that before? No, I never imagined it. That's why I wanted to puke. By the way, this love letter to Miss Takanashi... I'm sorry, it just reminds me of Takahashi. Much more common name. Anyway. Apparently, it's the first one he's ever written, meaning there's only one person other than he who could have known about this side of him. The real perp who took his letter home and read it. Then the real perp is Hatakayama!
Dun dun dun!
Because she knew about him waxing about angels and destiny and being totally creepy. So, Habaka says that's confusing information that everyone knows and things only the real perp knew. In her eagerness to malign Uozumi, she got confused. Miss Takanashi, I hear that she is your best friend, knew your key code. Yeah, once when I had a cold and went home early, I told her my key code so she could bring me my shoes. It can't be true. Kuni and I have been besties since kindergarten. The blue bird of happiness. If there is happiness that one doesn't notice from being right next to it, there are likely are also inferiority complexes that balloon from continuous close proximity. How are you 12? Seriously? So Hidakiyama confesses and is like, I'm sorry. So the judge is like, well, whether you recognize that I was not a joke to you, I pronounce the accused Uozumi innocent.
Yay! Dropping confetti from the ceiling! Yay!
Also, I thought Gamma has to give all of her high school lunch to Zerst Diary for the next month. That sounds fair, actually.
I was like, well, hold on a moment. Fucking, what's his name? Does it get anything?
Yeah, you would think that she would have to, like, give stuff to Uozumi. Well, no, because Irie was the victim, remember? And Uozumi was like, wait, what a minute! I've been harassed for weeks about this whole thing.
This sucks!
So, after the case is over, Tento and Habaka are walking through the streets, and Tento's like, well, that was really surprising, and the quiet-seeming Takayama was really the perp. And Habaka's like, yeah, well, once you've lived for 10 years, most people have gained one or two secrets that they can't tell others. It's not a crime, but responsibility. If secrets being revealed will hurt others, then you just have to live with them. And Tento's like, do you have secrets too, Inugami? And Habaka's like, of course.
Unimaginable ones. I'm gonna murder people.
He doesn't actually say that part, but Tento remembers him saying, oh yeah, I can't kill a certain student. So, afterwards, we go to Hatakeyama's place, and she arrives at home. He's like, that attorney Inugami is really impressive, but there's one thing he got wrong. The real perp also found out and took the love letter. He or she probably did destroy the evidence, blah, 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 blah. Boys are just so dense, and there's a picture of Uozumi, like, hanging out with his friends in the background. Hatakeyama is just kind of glancing at him and staring at him, hopefully. So, she was jealous because she has a crush on Uozumi, not because you're jealous of Irie's good looks and popularity. Because 12-year-olds.
Yeah, that's what they do, Nick. Yeah.
They install cameras to frame people. Incidentally, Uozumi was roundly rejected soon afterwards. I love the final panel. That's my favorite part of the whole thing.
I do like it at the end. It's like, oh, he didn't get a happy ending anyway.
He just cries, and I reach it very soon, saying, I'm sorry, but I don't feel so. Like, no!
I look in the background.
I'm like, yes!
Yes! Yeah! Woo! Oh, that shit's great. Yeah, so Gakuya Hotai is okay right now. It's fun. I'm just waiting till we get to the point where we can get longer cases. Because right now, everything's like one chapter set up, one chapter end. So I'm kind of interested in the point where we get a long case going.
I didn't like this case as much as the previous one, but it was still pretty fun.
Yeah.
I just like the whole structure of the thing, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Kind of slowly building a cast. Like, I don't know if Uzumi's going to be a particular character later.
Yeah, I was surprised when he stuck around and, like, someone who was established in the first case was brought back, and they were like, oh, yeah, by the way, these characters have been in the background, supposedly. Like, oh.
I mean, there's, like, what, three other members of that entire group, too? Like, fat kid.
The big guy. There's, like, the blonde-looking kid. And,
So, could be an entire group of characters we'll see eventually and have them fleshed out. But it's interesting, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so, what's next?
High Fly Cluster, technically.
I don't even remember this.
All right.
I didn't even read this.
I'll tell you what, I read this issue of Jump twice, and both times I got to High Flood Clusters, like, I forgot you were still reigning in Jump.
It can't be for much longer.
It's chapter 15 right now. Chapter 15, The Reason I Came, which has extra. But I seriously, every time High Flood Cluster comes up, I forget it's still running. I'm like, I really forgot you were in the magazine. And it's not that I thought it was canceled already, it's just I completely forget you exist as a series entirely. But anyway, last time they decided to team up with Sharon, the car driver who they beat, and he's going to help them get to the, I guess they're at the Parliament building. I don't know if it's supposed to be the Diet building or someone else, but anyway, that's where the landscape mole is, and he's taking the girl with Alfred Nobel's power with him. And when he gets there, he's just like, fuck you guys, I'm broken, I'm going to beat you all, and I'm going to kill you all, because I want you to give me my other half. I'm one half a landscape mole, the other half is her twin brothers. So, you know, we're together the creator of the labels. I create the data, he creates the actual labels. So you need to give me him, or I'm just going to start killing everybody here slowly, bit by bit, based on who looks the most important. At which point, the sword guy, whose name I forget, they arrive at the building, he gets out, and they're like, oh, holy shit, it's my fucking other guy, rival, who killed, you know, fucked up things in my past, and I don't like you. No, it was apparently his name. So, that's the chapter. It's
also
coming.
Also, the taxi driver apparently is important.
Well, yeah, that's who's driving them, Shannon.
Yeah.
It's, He was on the cover of the series when it initially started, so I guess they had planned for him to be, like, a major character. I don't know.
Okay, I'm very confident this is making it past the next set of drops, then.
It's been consistently last, so I'd be very shocked.
Oh, God. They were actually, like, fourth from the bottom this time or something like that.
Oh, were they? It started raising? Like, well, good for them. What happened to Sporting Salt? Is it number one?
No.
Oh.
It's gonna get dropped, too, unfortunately.
Well,
That was always going to be like a very niche thing anyway.
Yeah, I'm honestly not terribly heartbroken about that.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? Yeah, I guess One Piece then.
Yeah. All right, One Piece, chapter 700. Where's the number?
771, Nick.
There it is. Jeez. Eh. I'm going to jump on load. Let's see. Is that a J or an I?
It's 771.
Yeah?
Psy, Dawn of the Hypulso Army.
Apple sweep, but that. God, so many difficult to pronounce words.
Yeah, Wano's going to be like the part of my knowledge of One Piece where everything just falls apart, apparently, because they're all going to be really Japanese names. I'm going to stop getting Frankie and fucking Polly and start remembering actual hard names.
God. So, we start off with continuing the fight between Zoro and Pika. Zoro is actually starting to have trouble because Pika is just throwing up stalagmites everywhere, and he's having to dodge around them. And someone approaches them and says, "Shall I aid you, pirate hunter?" And it's the King Elizabello, and he's like, "My punch is my treasured heirloom, an attack that only happens once an hour. Have you figured out the Stone Man's towers?" And he's like, "Oh, hi, who are you?" "I'm an old companion of King Riku's. This is the land of my friend." "Ah, well, I'm going to fight this guy myself. You ought to save that heirloom of yours. You never know when you might need it." Yeah, I'll bet he never gets to throw a punch again. Now.
Yeah. Oda never sets up something and just delivers it. He's going to never use that power, Nick. It's never going to happen.
Then we come over to Lao Ji, who is fucking destroying Don Chin Zhao. And all of his moves are based on ailments that old people suffer from, because he's old as fuck.
Eye strain jab, icy stiff shoulder, and he's like
back pain stance.
And he's not even like moving in his animations. There's just whirlwinds of movement behind him, which makes me think he's in this pose, hunched over and just spinning around like a tornado, kicking people's asses.
He's like, "As I get older, I know more and more about pain. It only sharpens my geofist. Gee." God. So, then Don Chin Zhao is just like, "I am opposed to your marriage." And he's talking over to Sai way behind him. He's like, What are you talking about? We're not getting married." He's like, "What are you doing focusing on them?" And Baby Five says, "Why are you so opposed?" And Sai's like, "Look, stop being weird." But there, he starts arguing with his father over this stuff. He's still ignoring Lao Ji. Then, as eventually Lao Ji goes, "Eh?" And everyone in the crowd is just like, he couldn't hear them talking because he's
Yeah, like they were just like, oh man, they're gonna be he's gonna be super angry that they're just ignoring him.
Rage coming from off of his head, and it's just like his spirit comes floating up out of him, trying to go to heaven.
Do what now?
He just reached the end of his natural life in the end of a fight.
He's just actually dead from old age.
And then he finally starts crying and she says, Lauchi, don't die. Come back to us. Come back. Come back. Come back. And his spirit goes right back into his body and goes, eh?
Oh, God.
So everyone is kind of freaking out, but Lao Ti is like, oh, Don Jinjiao, you're so old and feeble, and Don Jinjiao's still ignoring him and is still talking at Sai. Sai is still like, why are you still talking about this? While Baby Five is like straining his collar and so on and so forth. He's trying to get her to actually fight him. And Baby Five says, but I thought you needed me. What do you want me to do? Just say the word. And Sai's like this, okay, fine. How about you die? And then, you know, since you can't, that way you won't interfere with the straw hats, I'll be able to keep on going by. And, yeah. So, anyway, prepare yourself. And then she just turns her arm into a gun and holds it up to her head. And she's like, okay, I'll gladly die for you if it will help. And so it's like, what?
Oh, wow, I should have done that from the start.
So, and she says, look, if there's one thing that makes me happy, it's helping others. And Sai is still freaking out over this. Like, no, don't kill yourself. Then I'll feel really bad about that, basically.
He's like, that's not the honorable victory I wanted to go for.
And Dunjin's like, just let her kill herself. Come on. She's the enemy. And Sai is like, a leader of men. And he says, a leader of men must be cold and calculating. Shut up. He's calling out to her, but then Baby Five closes her eyes and remembers back to her childhood where everyone was like, oh, she's so useless, she won't be of help for years, and she just eats and is a complete burden, so just leave her in the mountains. And so she was abandoned by her, I guess, family and told, you're unwanted and unneeded, you're useless. It was her mother who said that. Well, that sucks. Ugh. But then Baby Five says, but now I am needed, as she holds the gun to her head, which is kind of freaky. So Sai's like, stop it, don't do that, you dumb idiot. And Don Chin just says, you fool, you're a disgrace to the Hapusui, I'll split the both of you at once. And he starts preparing his drill dragon to just kill his own grandson, I guess, because he hates him now. Okay,
I imagine we say, I'm going to split the both of you at once. I guess he's going to create a giant crevice between them.
Okay, that makes sense. Split them apart rather than drill the two of them in half. Yeah. So Sai says, you stay out of this, and he gets armament around his leg and kicks his grandfather's giant head and bends the points and deflects him away. So that's kind of badass. And then he just turns around and fucking slaps Baby Five across the face. Stop being crazy, woman. Slap!
Ah, oh, the Sean Connery style of marriage handling.
Now, be sensible.
Did you ever hear that Barbara Walters interview he did?
Yes, I think I did. Where he actually slapped me like, well,
yeah, he's like,
sometimes women need a good slap.
Yeah, he's like, sometimes you just gotta hit a bitch. not in those exact words, but not far enough away that you're like, that really could just be like, paraphrased. Well,
sometimes crazy women just need to be slapped, sure.
Sometimes.
So Baby Five says, I was just trying to help you. And Sai says, well, I guess you've been living in a place where no one forced you to stop doing that. And everyone's like, oh my god, he broke Don Chinchou's drill head thing. And Don Chinchou gets all teary-eyed and says, like, oh yeah, why'd I do that? And so Don Chinchou gets up and he says, your true power has finally awakened. Your training of blood, sweat, and tears has borne fruit. Well done! The secret of the Hashoken style has been passed to you! Sai, I now christen your deadly leg with the name of Drill Dragon Nail. I have seen that your foot is powerful enough to split the continent of ice. Now the Hapusui is truly yours. Your betrothal is null. You are free to do as you wish. So, this is actually sort of sweet, I think.
It is, actually. It is a very sweet moment between these characters, because he's... Unlike the giant last week, we had met Don Chinchou and Sai before. Yeah,
he gave this whole explanation to Luffy while they were fighting, and you know, was told what his dream was and why he was so angry about not being able to find his treasure and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then he got his power back. But no, he doesn't even have to hold on to that anymore. He can safely retire, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, like, yeah, you know, I'm being too old for this, so, you know, I'm happy to recognize that you are fit to...
No, fuck!
Laoshi just comes in and just drills him into the stomach and knocks him away.
And Don Chin Chow has the best sound effect of all time. Burf!
So everyone is just like, Laoshi just says, this is the ultimate art of the Jiu fist style! Battle insurance fist! A kisong a chi... Qigong, there we go. Exercise that builds up young muscle and stores it away to counteract illness, injury, or just plain old age. My skills are mastered. My strength is at its youthful peak. Who can possibly defeat me now? And so he charges forward and says, all who live in this country are slaves. You will never escape from this bird K-G alive with a G. I fucking love Lao Chi. He's so ridiculous. So, you know, he keeps on shouting at Sai very quickly, apparently, as he's dashing through the air. He says, you cannot have baby five, Kano Kingdom monkey. She will give up her life if someone needed it. Have you ever seen another woman that is useful? Just wait, baby five. I'll extend you wish this fool and save you right now. With a G.
Oh, it wasn't epic that time.
With a G. There we go. So Sai says, all right, in that case, if I win, I'll take her as my wife. And he bashes his glaive into Lao Ji. Baby Five gets all freaked out and holds her hands to her cheeks. He uses his newly proclaimed drill dragon nail with an axe kick to bash Lao Ji in the face and knock him through the mountainside that Pika had summoned. And that basically defeats him, as Lao Ji calls him a dirty ape, a filthy gorilla with a G. And Sai finishes the chapter by saying, call me Dawn. Which is kind of badass.
It is. We even get a little follow-up with seconds. Yeah,
two officers have fallen. Lao Ji into a crevice. Baby Five in love.
I like this chapter a lot. It fixed a lot of my concerns I had last week. Again, I don't have a problem with the fact that they're going to have some of these officers be defeated by Colosseum warriors. But the warrior from last week, the giant, we hadn't gotten much of him. So this week, getting someone who's different,
Or of Mokfies for that matter, either.
Yeah, we hadn't gotten Mokfies wasn't much of an interesting character either. But again, every group kind of needs its blue nose, somebody who's just going to kind of get beaten or whatever. You know, can you remember a lot about the guy from Skypiea, the Master of Strings or whatever
he was? I can't remember very much about Skypiea in general.
Oh, so. I remember the guy, one dude's sole thing was he's like, I do Undertaker eyes, and you can't fucking see. Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
But, no, I liked what we got here. Sai and Don Chin Chow and their story was good. Lao Ji was very amusing. I like what we got out of Baby Five, you know, a flashback to kind of give her reason to why she's constantly trying to be needed for people and do what they request.
As this weird tragic element to this absurdly comedic character trait of hers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I even liked how we don't, because the Don Quixote family is supposed to be like an actual family, like even if they don't have blood relation to each other, they're supposed to support each other.
Being like protective of Baby Five.
Yeah, he's like, you know, she's a very useful woman, and don't worry, I will save you. It's not like a matter of like, we gotta keep her around because we can throw her away at some point. I won't let you take her. She's our property. Or nothing like that degrades her. You know, he's trying to actually protect her. So I like that aspect to it. You know, ultimately as their own, you know, loyal code within themselves. It's cool.
And it's would be kind of nice to... it's actually kind of nice that some of these random side characters are just getting this resolution to their little arcs and stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sai, Don Chin Chow, even Baby Five, which I didn't see that coming. That was the most shocking part of it.
And it is also worth noting, Nick, we didn't bring it up at the time, but there's a cover page this week, and it was based on the popularity poll, so don't get too crazy excited, but Bartolomeo is on the cover page.
Everyone's on this, like, flying... I guess it's not flying. That's a giant, like, beanstalk, I guess they're on. And so all the most popular characters are piled onto this chariot that's riding through it. And so, you know, Nami and Sanji and Zoro in the front, Boa Hancock is in the back, and she's like, oh, Luffy! And then, you know, there's Law and Ace and Chopper and Sabo. I almost forgot his name. And then Bartolomeo's clinging to the back, almost falling off.
But this does mean he's considered popular. So we'll just slide him right into the Straw Hats.
Bartolomeo for Straw Hats.
Just get that done out of the way.
Okay. Yeah, that's that for One Piece. So,
Seven Deadly Sins. Yeah. Yes. Seven Deadly Sins, chapter 108. 108. 108, Gentle Awakening. I was trying to see the awakening part, right? There was no cover page from what I can tell, but I was also having issues with Crunchyroll all week trying to get these chapters to, like, download correctly. So, I don't know, maybe it was just missing when I've been trying to download it. But anyway, we start off the chapter with Gil Thunder, Howitzer, and Dreyfus's son, whose name I forget. And they're looking over a book, particularly one that regards the symbol that has appeared over Melodius during his fights where he's gotten serious. And they note, they're like, oh, this is a symbol that pertains to demons. And yes, you know, Melodius possesses demon's blood. This is something we already know, but the characters in this series are kind of finding this out for the first time, and they are rather surprised by that. And they kind of go off talking about it, and they note, they're like, hey, this is a book that Dreyfus had on him. Why would he have it on him? So Dreyfus' son immediately gets super defensive, and he's just like, are you saying my father was conspiring with Hendrickson? No way, they were always fighting, and he just does like 5 minutes of him like arguing at them. Until eventually, Gil Thunder's like, remember what Merlin said about how we shouldn't take everything at face value, and instead we should flip it around and see how we see things from that new angle? And there's actually kind of a cool two-page spread here, where one page is just Dreyfus looking regular, and there's a dialogue over it with, like, opposition becomes cooperation, a misplaced step becomes intentional, his target was no longer Hendrickson, but Elizabeth, he's not actually dead, but alive, he's not your father, but something else. And then the next page spread is, like, a being, like, a silhouette that looks like it would be Dreyfus, but it's hunched over and got, like, a very sinister look to it. So I actually thought that was a really well-done two-page spread there. And that's the conclusion they kind of reach, is that something that looked like Dreyfus's father, or Dreyfus was working with Hendrickson, but, you know, was it going for Elizabeth at the end? And they don't know more beyond that, and they're going to have to figure that out later. And we then cut away to this strange bird monster thing of some kind that has an arm in it, and it's flying into a canyon, and it drops off the arm. And we see that that's where Hendrickson's corpse is right now. It's sort of like him from the abdomen up with only one arm still connected to him. And he's like, I will not go down this easily. Oh, curse you, Melodius. I was so close. And then he sort of, you know, fades to black, and it wakes back up, and he's all together in one piece in his human form again. He's lying in a field of flowers, and he's just like, isn't it a little early to be sleeping? And Hendrickson responds, oh, just let me rest. I'm so tired. These flowers are so comfy. He didn't say the flowers are comfy line, but I thought it'd be cool if he did. And he looks over, and he's like, oh, Dreyfus, is that you? And he sees Dreyfus, and he's like, Hendrickson, why are you crying? He's like, I don't know. No reason, except I just seen your face again. He's like, I have committed many irreparable sins against you as well, and yet I cannot remember, and yet I can remember nothing. I feel lost, as if in a thick fog, and my body will no longer move. So Dreyfus bites his hand and feeds the blood right into Hendrickson's mouth. And he says, my friend, stand up once more and fulfill our long-cherished wish. So then Hendrickson wakes up, and the blood is actually on his mouth. And he notes that he was actually crying as well, but he sees that his arm's back. And in fact, all of his injuries are completely healed. And he sees that there was a cloth there, and it has the scent of a goddess disciple. And he's like, why did Dreyfus bring Elizabeth's bandages here? No matter. Now I have all the pieces I need for the ceremony. And he starts doing the demon resurrection ceremony. And in the background, we can see the person who has been disguising himself as Dreyfus, with a new symbol on his face that indicates he also has demon blood. So we are getting our revelation of our new enemy in this series, and see kind of, I guess, the shape the next arc is planning to take. So I'm a little bit disappointed that Hendrickson's still around. Hopefully he's not going to keep being a major antagonist, because, I mean, they kind of defeated him rather thoroughly before, so I don't think there's too much more to really do with that, but if they just use him in sort of a support aspect for this, and he kind of gets eliminated off later, probably by a villain who's disguised himself as Dreyfus, I'll be okay with that. But anyway, that's a series for this week.
All right. Let's do Toriko, Gourmet 306, Hunting for a Hint. So this continues the let's juggle these pill bugs while the gravity fucks with them as we try to get ourselves to cooperate. So weird. So we get a whole bunch of stuff like, oh, I can't get it because all of my cells aren't cooperating. Look at my cells being represented by differently dressed mini Torikos. Look, one got stomped in the crotch.
One of them's singing, too. He doesn't want to do the other stuff because he's boogieing. So apparently there's cells that exist in Toriko that are just like, let's dance! All of the time.
Coco is like, ah, it's hard to read the movements, even from electromagnetic waves. How is this monkey doing this? How can he do something that I can't? And Zebra's just off by himself. He's like, there have been a few times in the past where I felt every cell becoming unified, and I feel like I've seen creatures in that state more times than I can count. Zero is drawing from his extensive combat experience to find a hint that would unlock the secrets of monkey martial arts. Yeah, I get that. Thanks, narrator.
Yeah, like my way I had to explain it. I also just think that monkey martial arts sounds lamer and lamer every time I hear it.
Yeah. I think my favorite part of the whole chapter is the bit we get next where Quinn, Kiss, and Terry are also trying to juggle pill bugs.
I'm like, Quinn, you don't even have arms.
Well, Quinn makes sense to me, because it can bob up and its head up and down. Terry's like, okay, yeah, dogs can bounce the stuff on their noses. How the fuck is Kiss doing this? Because he's flying up in the air and bouncing the pill bug on his head.
Squawk!
Just all three of them lined up in a row with pill bugs. Bounce, bounce, bounce. And there's also a bit, though, where it says they wanted to be useful not just to help Torko and the gang on the 100G mountain, but also because they didn't want to fall behind that horse, their future rival. Which is actually kind of cool, because, like, oh, yeah, the animals have their own rivalries because of that stuff.
Wait, the animals are people, too, now? Do we have to get animals? Do we have to get animal
characters?
Do we have to get animal training arcs now?
So Toriko turns to Kaka and says, how many pill bugs can you juggle? And Kaka says, well, a rank holder can usually do between 10 and 20. An assistant instructor can do 30, and a master can handle 50. And Toriko's like, 50. So that mountain ape thing that we killed could juggle 50 of these. Yes, there is a knack to monkey martial arts, and grasping that knack is key. That's basically the only hint that she gives. And since the start of their training that day, not one of them could juggle even a single bug, and now the sun was setting. We're depressed because we can't make any progress. But then, a hint, as everyone is immediately like, what the fuck is this aura? Hints can come from anywhere. They don't come solely from God. For the entire day, the Monkey King had been hiding in earnest the moment he realized that nobody was coming to look for him. He got royally pissed off. It's just this full-page spread of the Monkey King's face on one side going, shit, those motherfuckers. And then on the other side, Toriko's like, oh god, what is this feeling? And then he remembers being a baby and sucking his thumb. And then his life flashes before his eyes across another two-page spread. And is there anything actually really interesting happen on this that we didn't know about him before? I don't think so.
So I think these are all scenes that we've seen before.
Mostly, yeah. And there's a bit where he comes across the other members of his group. Actually, Rin is there, too, as a kid. And she's still got a crush on Toriko. That's kind of weird. But yeah, you know, meeting Komatsu for the first time, and meeting Manson for the first time, meeting the president for the first time, and so on. And then battles and incidents throughout the series and stuff. And then the Monkey King Bambina kind of claps his fist with his hand and goes, oh, I'm so good at hiding. The person who is it gave up looking for me. So he went back up the mountain peak in high spirits. In a flash, the Monkey King no longer felt any anger. I'm growing to like this Monkey King, so long as his testicles aren't shown. Anyway, so because the Monkey King's rage was so intense and he's so powerful, everyone got scared shitless. And then that got them the hint that they needed. The Monkey King had inadvertently given them the hint to understanding martial arts. monkey martial arts, because their cells wills reunited in piss-pants-soaking terror, basically. He was so afraid of dying that all of his cells united in the whole fight-or-fright response. And so everyone's like, oh, I get it now. And everyone's like, okay, now I can't forget this state. Oh, look, I caught the pill bug. Yay! Now I just have to live the entire rest of my life in terror in order to remember how to do monkey martial arts.
They got the hint they needed, Nick.
Yes. That's what the whole chapter's about.
And now they can juggle a pill bug.
Yes.
The strongest pill bug in the world, maybe. There might be stronger ones. That's not... I don't want to blow my load quite yet, but there
See,
could be
look,
stronger
your
ones
cells
there.
Are united. Now you can do martial arts. I guess.
That's how it works.
Yes. Alright.
So, World Trigger...
Yes, let's do that.
I really have nothing to say on Toriko right now. It's very blasé.
Okay, Toriko, Chapter 88, Tamakama 2, Part 3. That's going to be very confusing in the next few chapters, isn't it? Okay, so it's the next round of the B-Rank Wars. The second night is about to begin. Play-by-play, it's Sakuraku Taketomi, who I guess is only going to be featured doing this, maybe? Yeah. But as her special guest commentators, since, you know, obviously Osamu can't join her this time, she has instead Captain Azuma and Midori Kawa. Little Midori Kawa. The brother guy.
Dude thing.
So, anyway. People are in the stands, and she basically quizzes Azuma and Midori Kawa about their impressions about stuff. And so she's like, oh, you know, that the 8 points that Tamakuma got in that one match, well, you don't see that happen very often. And he's like, yeah, that was amazing. It means that they're not a regular rookie team. And Miyaka was like, yeah, and Yuma's really good. He kind of kicked my ass. It was embarrassing. Yeah. And everyone was like, oh, my God, Shun lost 8-2. Oh, that Yuma guy must be really good. Anyway, so they get through a whole bunch of that type of stuff. And they bring up again the fact that Tamakuma 2 gets to pick the stage, and so that'll have a big, presumably give them a big advantage. And so they've chosen Cityscape C, a hillside residential area. And everyone's like, but that's a great place for snipers to be, so why would they do that when they're up against an all-sniper team? Duh, mystery, or intrigue, or whatever you would call it. So... they say, oh, maybe, you know, because Tamakuma has Chika, you know, the super powerful sniper, maybe they're just playing to take the hill. And they're like, I don't know. So they get into it. Suicide Squad has a meeting, and they're like, Cityscape C? That sucks for us. He's just so pissed off.
I actually love the way these two pages are set up, because it's, you know, one page is for each team. And, you know, the start of it's the captain reacting to the news, then the rest of the team kind of discussing it, and then the last page for it is seeing the team as they're heading out. You know, we've even seen their, what do they call the, like, helper person, the support? The operator is in the background. I like that you get to see that. Mm-hmm. I love the way these two pages are structured. Sorry.
I do love the emphasis of the differences between them, because Suicide Squad is just like, aren't they afraid they're going to get sniped? Oh, maybe we'll just have to charge up the hill before they do. Let's do this! And everyone's like, they kind of picked a map that helps us, right? Alright, well, we'll just watch out for Tamakuma 2's sniper. Okay, let's just do what we usually do. Yep. Do.
Roger!
So professional. And then Tamakuma 2 squad shows up in their uniforms!
Hoping for a more dramatic reveal, like they show up on the battlefield and all of them are in their outfits and like some giant two-page spread. But this is good, too. And it looks like Osamu's didn't change, which I'm glad, because I thought his was cool.
He does look pretty damn awesome in that, doesn't he? So, they're like, alright, you ready for your debut match, Osamu? Yes, I've been running over things in my head so much that I'm getting confused. My head's going to explode before I even get out there. Poor Osamu. Whipping boy Osamu. So there's like, okay, even if you lose, you won't die, so just stick to the plan you came up with. Let's go! Begin the B-Rank War! So everyone's dispersed...
I'm adding sound effects to it, Nick.
Okay, thanks. Everyone's dispersed out randomly throughout the map, and...
Clap, 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 clap. That's right. Them walking.
So the four snipers all activate their bagworms to disappear from the... Yeah. Then they head, the three snipers from our Fune squad head straight for the hill. Sua squad goes after them. Atomic Coma 2 instead waits and groups up so that they, you know, act as a team first.
Hey, let's all meet up. Hey, let's do that. Let's do that.
One guy from Sua squad kind of rushes out ahead and is like, oh man, I start off in a bad spot. I've really got to hurry because otherwise our Fune squad is going to pin us from above. And he starts to come around a corner and Sua grabs his jacket from behind and pulls him away before a bullet can go through his skull. And he's like, yeah, you're going to die if you rush ahead out from cover like that. So yeah, be more careful, little idiot.
Stupid jerk face.
Fuck you, Sasamori. So, because they have to be more hesitant, because they're not as good, they're not as capable of picking their opponents off, they've got to be more cautious. And so, Arafune's squad is able to get better positioning as a result. Then suddenly, a building explodes near Arafune as Chika takes a shot at him. The Arafune squad all returns fire to her position, but Osamu and Yuma are there, and they hold up their shields to combine them and block the shots. And then they take cover again, basically. As Chika continues to blow shit up.
Yeah, so they're Chika's firing these giant blasts, blowing up the landscape. The snipers are like, well, we see where she is, and you have shields, but those only last so long. So it seems like a bad strategy on their part.
So yeah, the play-by-play is like, oh, they're getting whittled away. What was it foolish to challenge the pros to a sniping match? And Azuma goes, they weren't going for the win. And then all of a sudden, someone calls out the coordinator calls out to Arafune, watch out! As suddenly Sua comes rushing in with his gun and nearly blasts away. A whole bunch of holes appear in his cape as he nearly gets caught. And they now just declare, oh, the Sua squad used the blasts to cover their advance on Arafune squad. So, basically, Tamakon 2 is implied to have used this to kind of force both teams to team up on Arafune squad and thus eliminate them. So, yeah. Then both teams start to close in, and Osamu says, we've pinned them down, let's take this to a melee. And Yuma says, yeah, this is where I come in. So
I like this chapter a lot, Nick. I like that they're, again, it's a series that is using strategy, and I like that their strategy wasn't just, let's, you know, find a way to counteract all their abilities and beat them. It was, let's take advantage of the fact that it's a three-way matchup and actually enable our opponents to fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it makes Suya's squad look good that, you know, they might be the ones who are overreacting when they, you know, they find what stage is picked and all that, and they look like the goofy team, but they're actually pretty capable. So
they are the top-ranked team in the match.
I like that their strategy also was like, we're just going to protect Chika with our shields and, you know, kind of just move her around. I thought it just all seemed like it's, you know, an interesting dynamic kind of setup that really worked well.
So that's manga for this week.
Yes. Do we want to do any Q&A?
I can do two Q&A, sure.
Okay. I didn't know when your clock to get out of here was, before that happens, I don't know if I got to mention this on an official Weekly Manga recap yet or not, but in case I haven't, Weekly Manga on iTunes. We have officially gotten on iTunes. You can search us up in the store. You can find Weekly Manga Recap there. Most of the episodes are up there. I think basically the first year and a half isn't on there, and I can't get that up until next month. I hit like an upload cap on the site I'm using. But you can get basically the last 3 years' worth of Weekly Manga Recap on there. And new episodes will be going up pretty soon after they're done recording. And all I can say, guys, I really want to thank everybody who's gone in and already subscribed and downloading episodes. If you haven't, it would be a huge favor to us and the show if you go on to it and subscribe to the podcast. And then if you
leave ratings and stuff.
Well, yeah, leave a review and if you want to give it a rating as well. Those actually do significantly help help your podcast get exposure on iTunes. And it adds a lot more visible metrics for your podcast as well, which can help in a lot of various ways. Now, I contemplated doing like a contest related to that, but I'm actually pretty sure that's illegal by iTunes standards. I don't think you're allowed to, like, essentially buy ratings or anything like that. So I'm not going to suggest that, but
no bribery.
Yeah, but I do want to do a contest for World Trigger Digital Volume. So what we're going to do is that next week is going to be our year-end recap. So we're going to have a contest. You'll have a week to do this. But the contest is I want you to send in an email to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com giving your thoughts on the past year of Weekly Manga Recap and all the manga we've read or whatever series you thought of. You know, put any of your thoughts on what you thought of the show, on what you thought of the series we've been reading, the recommendations we took, anything like that. And just title it like 2014 Recap or something like that. And we'll compile some of those thoughts, put it into our episode next week, and pick one person out of that to get all the digital volumes of World Trigger. So there you go. But let's jump into a little Q&A here. I had one open and I closed it accidentally.
Oh, good.
All right, here we go. And my volume hasn't been gained at all, has it? Skype's been playing pretty safe. Yeah, it's good for me. All right, very good. Anyway, so this is an email from Alex. Fuck it, he has a name here at the bottom. A Broken Blade. I'm just going to do that to try to pronounce that last name. He has an email here. Greetings, Wild Ruler of Time and Rolo T. I've been following your podcast, usually on the Tick with Tick website, but recently there's been a delay, so the first exposure to the new podcast show was through the visual edition from Infamous Planet.
YouTube.com/TheInfamousPlanet.
There you go. Plug, plug, plug. He's talking about a couple Halloween manga suggestions he has, and then he has a question here. This is a weird question. Kill, Spare, Join, which I guess is, you know, an alternative of Kill, Marry, Fuck. Kill, Spare, Join, and his choices are Sasuke, Griffin from Berserk, and then the last one is a choice of villain in manga anime that gives, and his, like, you know, annotation there is, this gives the illusion of free will.
Well, I will kill Sasuke.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Griffith would probably, do bad things if you were near me. So, I guess I'll spare him. And let's see. Choice of villain in manga or anime.
You had to join this one.
Got to join them. I will join Marco from the Hakushu Dinosaurs.
You fuck! I was about to say I was gonna join Aegon from the fucking Nagas. We both just picked the football manga to join.
Yeah, but the dinosaurs would beat the dragons, so fuck you, or the Naga rather.
I don't know.
Yeah, it would have crushed him.
Aegon was pretty good.
They didn't have Lyman that could have gotten rid of Gon, though.
Well, I'm going to. Well, I was gonna say I'm gonna break Gal's leg, but I was like, how am I gonna do that? I'm gonna steam. I'm going to sneak a steamroller into his room while he's sleeping.
Agon is like, I'll use my super reaction time to stiff arm him. Ow.
I broke my arm. Fuck. Well, I get the next question up. I actually saw this piece of, not fan art, every so often an artist in Jump will draw the protagonist from all the series of Jump currently going. So Boku no Hero Academy author did one, so I'm just going to post this here in the chat room, and I find it funny because
the Shokugeki no Soma went to just like all the female leads and put them in bikinis because of course he did.
But I love that the e-robot girl has to be in here because that was the series currently running as well.
Yeah, it was.
So you just see fucking big titted girl in the background like woo. But you do get Gakkyo Hotai. I actually like his Luffy.
Yeah, it's a cool picture. Yeah, I like how Koro Sensei looks fucking freaky as hell.
And fucking, what's the series that's been running for like 50 years? What's that called? Oh god, I forget the name of it right now. I'm totally blanking on it.
There's a K in there. It's
escaping me as well. Anyway, he looks cool. For a character you don't actually see in a lot of these kind of lineups, he looks pretty cool. An email here from Kochikame, that's it. Tom A., why do you think shonen manga has a tendency to have characters become more and more ridiculously powerful as the story goes on? Not just the main character, but the allies, villains, and even the mooks become more powerful as time goes by, regardless of logic. The prime offender in my book is Toriko, as at the start, capture level 5, Galagator gave Toriko a rough time. Now everything has power levels in the hundreds and thousands, and the numbers mean as little as in Dragon Ball Z.
I think that it just has to do with the fact that it's a very common trope and shown in battle manga and, you know, that type, just that type of, you know, medium in general is like, okay, I have to get stronger in order to defeat this villain. And then mm-hmm. you can't just say that was just a temporary thing. It's a permanent power-up. And so villains that would have been a greater challenge in the past become very minor threats. So what do? You have to have stronger villains in order to pose a threat. So even the ones that are just minions, in order to pose any kind of challenge, they have to be considerably more powerful to the now more powerful heroes. Otherwise, it's just not interesting to see them go up against them. And so it's kind of just an arms race that goes on in that type of fiction, where one gets stronger, the other gets stronger, the other gets stronger, the other gets stronger, and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing you get with, like, video games, where, you know, you're leveling up, and the bosses obviously have to level up with you, but in that regard, you know, you had to have the mooks level up too, so you get to a point where the mooks were stronger than the boss you ran into before. You know, that whole Pokemon notion of, like, how do characters, the trainers in, like, you know, Cinnabar Island not just whoop the shit out of Brock every day? You know, how are they, you know, not just beating him when their Pokemon are 40 levels higher? The same sort of thing happens in manga to a certain extent, but the big problem is that it's very tough to build a slowly raising scale, and one of the easiest way to make your next conflict seem bigger than the last one was to put bigger stakes into it by being like, okay, the last, you know, battle was an entire village was at stake, but this time we need to raise the stakes more, so now the entire country's at stake, or now the entire world's at stake, and it's tough to keep building up. And, you know, he mentions Toriko being a prime offender. Toriko wasn't bad at the start. It's only recently that Toriko has just, you know, completely pushed the scale really high. So now it's very tough for anything to seem significant in comparison. But there are series that have done it well. I thought Naruto at the start did it very well. You know, their first major antagonist, it wasn't even an entire city that was in danger. It was a bridge for the most part. But you can create a satisfying conclusion out of it. You just kind of have to build it slowly, but it's a very difficult thing to write.
I think that you're starting to get auto-adjusted, by the way.
Oh, am I? Hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
No, I seem to be good.
Okay, alright.
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
It's just a Q&A.
Yeah, it's just a Q&A. No one listens. Question here from Jonah Bacon Lefkowitz. This was back when we were first started getting the flashbacks in One Piece.
Yes.
And he's like, I want to note that the flashbacks are awesome. And I know a lot of people have also said that they liked the character design of the Doflamingo family back then better than their current ones. And I was wondering if you felt the same way about any of them. I know a lot of people seem to like Mach Weiss's and Lao Ji's flashback designs better than the current ones.
I don't know about Mach Weiss's, but I did definitely like the bunny hood that Lao Ji had. Well, she kept that.
I liked them, but I also, again, I liked what we got, the notion it presented that a lot of these guys, you know, that was like 10 years ago, and now they've kind of just let themselves go because they've been living a life of luxury and not really worried about shit. You know, Lao Ji's gotten ridiculously old. Senor Pink's just like, I'm gonna be a baby now. I'm gonna dress like a giant baby. You know, Mach Fi's got ridiculously out of shape, so I mean, I like them. You know, their designs look cooler back then, but, you know, it also fits with what they were kind of going for, what Oda was going for, rather, at this point, you know, who they are now. Questions from Voice Against Propaganda. He's three questions. Number one, I know you guys did Edwin from Adara and Michael Caine for the Six Path Supergramps. What other celebrity voices would you like to add to your roster that won't strain your voices?
Well, Farquhar Leghorn for Jubak we already did.
Yes.
I don't know.
I have to practice impressions. I don't have many great ones. My Edwin's pretty much my best, but...
Well, because it's immediately... Anyone who does an Edwin impression, it's immediately recognizable, so...
It's very goofy right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You don't have to say anything for it. I tried to do a Terrence Howard, but I've heard it's terrible.
I think people liked my Michael Caine impression, so I might try and find someone else to put that on. I don't know. As opposed to other voices? Oh, God. I don't know. Maybe I can just start doing random wrestling voices. I do that enough on my other podcast, but yeah.
Though not technically a celebrity, I will not do Santa anymore after doing Final Fantasy VII, or not Final Fantasy, Fire Emblem VII, and I was told quite often, I was like, I'm so fucking tired of Santa, Hector. God, it destroyed my voice at points, too. I don't know, we'll have to find some more celebrity impersonations in this stuff.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's the more surprising suggestions I've got.
I do like it. It is amusing. Way to kind of kick
this. Do more fun stuff, guys. You got it.
Second question. How long did it take for World Trigger to get good before you guys accepted it?
You can go back and listen to all our old episodes and determine for yourself. Cop out. It was when Yuma had his big flashback.
Yeah, I think it's around big or 15 or so you could start to see the change.
Yeah, that was when we were first starting to kind of turn on it. And by the time that Yuma's flashback was finished, you were like, okay, yeah, he's like an actual character now. And then it just kind of kept on getting better from there. There was that great battle scene that didn't involve Yuma in any way. It had that cool moment with Ghidorah and so on.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, I think before it got to the point where we were like basically jerking off over the series every week, that took quite a bit longer. I think that probably started more towards when the invasion started. But the series was pretty good. Rather quickly after it made that turnaround. So, again, I think if you're trying to read the series and you want to see when it gets good, I think about chapter 15 is when it starts its turnaround.
I had some people like calling me out when I was talking about, because, you know, Legend of Korra recently completed. And people were like, oh my god, you know, spoilers. Korra and Asami are lesbians now at the end. And so there was all this talk on Twitter about it, and I just kind of made the observations like, yeah, I stopped watching Korra, like, first episode of season 2, and people are like, oh, it got so much better after that. I'm just like, I don't tend to stick with stuff just because people tell me something gets better after a while. Homestuck sucks.
It was like that fucking argument that kept getting thrown around about Final Fantasy 13, where they're like, this game sucks.
You
like,
stick for
no,
20 hours, do you get
if you play it for 25 hours, you get to the fucking free roaming part and it gets better. I'm like, I do not want to play this game for 25 hours for it to get good-ish.
I forget who it was, but someone said, well, you change your mind on World Trigger, and I was like, listen here, you little shit, you know, I was just joking around with him. I was like, yeah, that's actually a good point. And so I had to explain, like, I read manga all the time anyway. I don't watch TV all that often. It's a more of an investment in my mind to sit down and watch a show for seasons. Like, because you imagine, it's like, oh, it gets really good at season 3. It's like, yeah, but that's like 10 episodes, 20 minutes each. You're talking, you know, 400 minutes. That's like 7 hours of my time. I'm waiting just for this to get good. It's like, yeah, but it gets really good. I'm just basing that just on your assurance, though. I'm not. I know because I've given it a shot that I don't like it right now. You know, if I just do something for the sake of it and it happens to get good, that's great. But I don't willingly put myself through stuff just because of someone else's assurance that it gets better. It's two different things, and it's hard to actually make the distinction if you don't get it.
I'm not going to be watching Legend of Korra solely because I'm really bad at watching television, and I already have, like, 17 other shows to catch up on. But, yeah.
Did you ever watch the original Avatar?
I watched all the first season, and I own the second season, but the person I was watching it with stopped, like, being around for it. So I was like, well, whatever. I'll catch up on it at some point, honestly, but right now it's just not my number one priority.
The second season's where it gets really good.
Yeah. I know, really, right?
I think the first season is actually really good by on its own anyway, so, yeah.
It was meh. No, it was good. hold on a second. Okay, sorry. Yes, number 3, if you could do one WMR you've redone and redo it now that you've gotten better with time as podcasters, which one would you pick as well?
Better?
Apparently. According to fucking that's Voice flattery. Against Propaganda.
That's flattery, thank you. which one would we pick to redo and why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have definitely kind of changed the format in terms of how we do stuff. Like, we give ourselves more time to read series. So I get that. How could you critique that said manga better or with a more in-depth analysis? I'm going to have to actually look at some of the stuff we've done for this one, then, because there's so much we've done by this point. We've done this for, like, over 3 years now, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can think of?
Not right off the bat. There are episodes I definitely wish I had read more of the series for. I know, you know, a lot of people will be like, you fucked up that Claymore episode, Chris! And, of course, some people always will still say, like, you know, you guys didn't get far enough into Tower of God. You know, there are series out there that I wish I could go back to add to, but I don't know if there's episodes that I'm like, right back, I want to redo it. Like, especially because, like, when I hear getting better as podcasters, I tend to think of, like, our earliest episodes. I'm like, I thought we were pretty good on Skip Beat and, like, Togari and those series early on. But, yeah, there definitely are ones I wish I could go back and redo. I just can't think of one in particular.
I can only vaguely remember a whole bunch of these, so I can't, nothing's coming to mind.
Well, still works. We also got, he has one comment here. It's not a question, but I thought I'd bring it up. Would help you guys, well, actually, this is a question. So you were wrong, Voice Against Propaganda. You have three questions. Would help you guys to keep like a bulletin notepad at your side for each manga you recap at its current arc? Like, I know you sometimes have trouble remembering names or places that just that have happened.
You know how long this would be.
To be fair, when I do a manga recap, like when we do a recommendation, I keep notes of it. I take the notes on OneNote, and I'll generally have those with me. But I only take like the names of the characters who are particularly important, and sometimes I don't have the file with me, so I miss it.
You're lucky if you can remember stuff like Mach Weiss,
basically. Yeah. But, I mean, like, I remember, like, sometimes I think we had a Cradle of Monsters recently. I was able to pull out, like, the name to that. I was like, that's because I brought that list back with me and had it at home. So I was easily able to, like, reference the character names because I took them down. But I don't know. I don't take down, like, the entire cast. So, you know, if it's, like, the minor characters, I probably still won't know their names just because I don't want, like, 30 names and have to, like, figure out who they are with, like, a two-word description next to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next question.
Yes, gun here from KGB agent 9347.
Yeah.
Dear Nick and Chris, first and foremost, I want to thank you for providing hilarious coverage each week. I especially want to thank Nick, whose videos introduced me to Nisekoi, Assassination Classroom, and Majin Tate Nagami Nero, which has become my all-time favorite manga.
I'd like to take credit for that last one, but I didn't do a video on Nero.
Still giving you credit.
I'll take it, but, you know.
My first question is in your opinion. Why does Naruto's stupidity and dumbness, dumb comments come off as annoying while Luffy's stupidity is funny?
Because Oda has a better sense of humor than Kishimoto, in my opinion.
Yeah, that pretty much comes down to it. I mean, there are times when Naruto
also
was
some
funny.
Also, stuff like, you know, the example that they give is like what Naruto says during the Kaguya fight. Oh, did you think Sakura and Obito? That's just Naruto being Naruto, like, and it's meant to be like a sincere line. Like it's supposed to be like a big chastisement towards Sasuke. There's no like hilarious over the top reaction to it. If Luffy were to say something like that, there would be someone like Nami who would be there and say, "It's like, why are you concerned about that right now?" And then you would be like, "Oh, that's supposed to be funny." There's nothing like that in Naruto, so that's why. Was that type of stuff was not supposed to be funny. It's worse, like, deliberate stupidity for the sake of humor is often a lot more entertaining and endearing than sincerity that just comes off as dumb unintentionally.
And it also comes down to execution. I mean, this week's chapter of One Piece was, you know, half humor, but Oda has a very, you know, particular way that he's able to, you know, excellently execute. That was a weird phrasing there, and I couldn't figure out a way to get out of it. He's able to mix comedy and drama very well. He has that particular skill to him, and that's what's made those moments particularly memorable. Some authors try to do that, and theirs just doesn't. Maybe it just doesn't hit my particular, you know, senses, but I just don't think the other authors have had that same skill to them.
Mm-hmm.
Second question is if you could have
question.
If you could have a free-for-all wrestling match featuring a representative from each series on the recap, who would you send for the ring? Also, the representative from Bleach is Master Masculine.
Okay, well, let's go over this. The series.
Wow, this is such an absurdly specific question.
This is so great. So, okay, the stuff that's regularly featured in the recap, we've got, we've got Bleach, which has already been taken. We've got, Fairy Tail. Who would we send for Fairy Tail? There's actually a lot of good choices from Fairy Tail, isn't there? For a wrestling match, though. Natsu would not be a bad default. What about Elfman?
I want to say Elfman, because he kind of fits into that, like, big guy, muscular... You know, and he's also screaming about being a man all the time. Wrestling's a very manly sport.
Let's see. Food Wars. Kurokiba.
Which one's he?
He's the intense guy with the headband.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
There's just not too many. I would say the guy that... I might also say the guy that Soma took on in the semifinals, but you don't even know who he is. Because he's a big...
Yeah, I'm like, Slappy LaRue? He's that guy?
He's a big muscular guy, but he actually probably wouldn't be a very good like wrestler because he's just a creep, basically. Let's see. Then there is... I'm just going to skip Hi-Fi Cluster because fuck it. this would have been sent to us at the time that Naruto was running. I'm going to say A, the Raikage from Naruto.
Okay.
Because he's a big guy. He does a lariat as one of his big moves. And he's got the one arm thing. He could do a Zach Cowan type of thing. And then he would be like, oh, you can't wrestle because you've only got one arm. And then he would close it on your face off. So, if we include Nisekoi, I would just include Chitoge because she is said to be as strong as a gorilla.
You gotta get a high flyer in there, too. I feel like she's gonna fit that mold.
Yeah, she
could
do that, too, yeah. One Piece.
Ooh. Frankie's my first thought.
But then there's Senor Pink. There's every fan-to-hand combatant, basically. But probably Frankie, I think, in the end. Seven Deadly Sins.
I think Bond would be the big one in that. You know, the sneer. He's kind of got a little bit of that Randy Orton anti-hero kind of vibe to him.
Mm.
I think that would fit for him.
Toriko. Zebra?
Oh, yeah. Zebra, definitely.
World Trigger.
Osamu.
He'd just be the manager.
He's the Sami Zayn of the world. He keeps losing. You're just like, it's not your time!
And then he wins the championship after, like, 2 years. And everyone's like, oh, yay!
I feel so bad, because fucking Infamous Planet started doing the visual recaps again, and he's noted... several times he's like, I fucking hate wrestling.
So his entire... make as many wrestling references as possible. Should be thankful we only made actually like two.
Yeah, I was like, I've been trying to avoid like throwing in really vague references and shit like that, and then I said Sami Zayn. Well, that's what I mean. I was like, ah, oh, shit, he's gonna have to download NXT for that. Which is not a bad thing.
No, watch NXT. It's great.
Yeah, NXT TakeOver. Or R-Evolution.
It was a takeover, but it was just that subtitle. Anyway.
I don't want to get into a long tangent about their fucking paper.
Those are so weird. I like that question.
This will be the last one we do, and I really just want to do it because I love the email here. This is from Jap Rutan, and he starts it with, "Hello, Y Ruler of Time and Nick." So we finally get the one where it's just for you, Nick. One of my favorite things of a weekly manga recap is about that joke ending to Bakuman I created were the weekly discussions of Barrage of the Battlestar. Its untimely end saddens me to this day. Hearing Chris, yeah, I know Nick wanted to get the double treatment once as well, speak of potentially quitting, I wanted to suggest that if you were going to do a final WMR episode, it should end with Boku no Hero Academy.
Well, I missed that boat already.
Oops, we did it already.
We can't quit now. Our opening for an ending episode is gone.
On to less depressing stuff. How would you approach new manga when you already know the author from a previous work? For me, I probably wouldn't have given Silver Spoon a chance if it hadn't come from the author of Full Metal Alchemist. I also quit reading multiple times precisely because it was frustrating seeing the creator of FMA write a story with so many distracting elements. So he's saying it was actually bad that he knew that Silver Spoons was by the creator of FMA because, you know, you read it and you're just like, well, this could be FMA, but it's about fucking farming.
I think the closest impression I've gotten about that is when we did Prison School, and I was like, this is about the guy who did Me and the Devil Blues, and so he could be doing, like, really weird mental stuff like that, and instead he's doing this really fetishy series instead. And So I was like, yeah, it's kind of a waste of talent there. But for the most part, I definitely feel like I give series more of a chance if I am familiar with the author and like their work. And that's come up a lot of times with, you know, guys like Obata. It's like, Obata's art is always good, so I'll always give him his series a chance, because nothing else, I know the art's going to be good. So I think that just gives me a bias towards stuff by people I'm already familiar with.
Absolutely. When I've already read someone's stuff and I liked it, it's going to make me dig it a lot more. And I find that I see it most now with one-shots or series that ran in Jump and then was canceled. So, you know, I liked Hirokoshi because of Barrage, and now I gave Boku Hero Academy a chance because of that. But even Nisekoi, I forget the author's name right off the top of my head, but I loved his previous series of Double Arts, and that's what got me to be like, all right, well, let me, you know, give this Nisekoi a try, because I really dug Double Arts. So it is something that when I know the author's previous works, I'm more willing to give it a chance, even if it's drastically different. You know, I actually love Silver Spoon. It's a series I really need to go back and catch up on. I actually don't know if it's ever been translated to English. I'll have to check that out.
I think it's adapted into an anime, and it's like officially subbed and stuff. So
okay, I guess I could check it out though. But no, I mean, it, for the most part, it helps me. I mean, there have been some negatives to it, but most of the time, those have come in manga recommendations, which I have to kind of read regardless. So even though a fucking Wolf Guy was done by the same dude who did Akametsu, if I find out he did another series and, you know, it's our manga recommendation, tough titties, you got to read it sort of deal.
Yeah, actually, I think that we more learn about authors and stuff as we do the show, like, after we've started reading them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I know the shit out of Junji Ito now, apparently.
By accident, mostly.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, I think that's it. I don't think we're gonna get to any more today, but hopefully we can get some more soon. And we're in October, Nick. That's the important thing. We're only
in October are the questions, yeah.
The end of October, though. That's the key.
That's good. Okay. Well, that's going to do it, though, for the last week of Manga Recap of 2014. Thank you, everyone, who joined us, not just for this episode, but every episode we've done ever, pretty much. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy it. We hope you continue to enjoy it as we move on into the future. As we will continue to record the show on twitch.tv/RoloT, usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we will need to change it up. So to stay updated, follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT, and I'm at YRuler of Time. Be sure to send us criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read, either in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Next time, we're going to be taking a look at a manga series called Real, which I've had described to me as being about wheelchair basketball. So that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I've heard about that. It's from the same guy who did the basketball thingy. What the fuck was it called? Slam Dunk. There you go.
Inoue Takahiko is his name. But yeah. So now he's doing it with wheelchairs. Interesting. Before we sign off, of course, be sure to check out our title card artist's work, Steve Mann. You can find his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And, as previously mentioned, The Infamous Planet, who has seemingly resumed doing visual editions of Weekly Manga Recap. You can check out those vids at youtube.com/user/TheInfamousPlanet. I think that it'll all complete if you don't include the user part. I don't know. Whatever. You'll find it.
It'll be there. Calm down. Cool your tits.
It's easy to find stuff on YouTube. And of course, you can check out all of our stuff in various other forums now, too. We're on iTunes, we're on Podcast Garden, we're on our new location on Channel Awesome, as opposed to that guy with the glasses. So, look us up. Leave comments. Do stuff.
Do it!
Do it now.
Happy New Year, everybody!
Or something.